It's the 19th hole with Michael Williams.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of The 19th Hole. I am your host, Michael Williams, bringing you the best of the best of the best in golf and golf lifestyle. The golf season is getting going full force now. It's getting warmer outside, and it is red hot now on the PGA Tour. Congratulations to champion Cameron Young for his victory at the Players' Championship down at TPC Sawgrass. It was exciting to watch. I hope you had as much fun watching it as I did. And it really just gets me excited for playing golf. And when I'm excited to play golf, I like to go great places. And there is no greater place than the destination of Myrtle Beach. That is the place that I think, in a way, invented the idea of destination golf. It is bigger and better than ever. Joining me today are two people who know a lot about Myrtle Beach and are willing to share that information with you. Tracy Connor is the executive director and president of the Myrtle Beach and Area Golf Course Owners Association, and he's going to be telling us about the history of Myrtle Beach golf, the growth of the game, what they have to offer, and all the great ways that you can enjoy yourself in that Myrtle Beach area that are on the golf course or related to the golf course. He knows all about it, and he's going to share it with us. Also joining us on the show, Brandon Johnson. His golf course design company has just undertaken a new project in Myrtle Beach that I did play recently. It is a fantabulous new golf course that is there. Newly renovated course, and it is wonderful to play. Brandon's going to tell us something about what he did there, as well as talking about what's going on in the game of golf, the new cohort that's coming into the game, what are some of the new trends that are going on in golf design. There's nobody better qualified to talk about the game of golf when it comes to course design than Brandon Johnson. We're really lucky to have him, and I can't wait for you to hear this conversation. So why don't you go get yourself a cold beverage and a crunchy snack, sit back and relax, and let's get on with the show, shall we? We'll be right back. Michael Williams, 19th hole.
Hi, Michael. This is Barbara Nicholas. You've got a great voice. We love hearing what you have to say, and we wish you the best for many years.
Welcome back to the 19th hole. Michael Williams, your host. As many of you know, my parents were from South Carolina. And they were from the Greenville area, but I got to know and travel around South Carolina, and I've got to say, just like, and it doesn't make me unusual, but like millions of people, Myrtle Beach is one of my favorite areas of South Carolina. If it's fun, you can find it in Myrtle Beach, and golf is fun. You can find Myrtle Beach there. Myrtle Beach, actually, I think is, in many ways, it set the tone, it set the stage, and it set the standard for destination golf travel in this country. And to this day, it remains a standard in golf travel, destination travel in the United States. It has grown, it has become better and better over the years, but I know a little about it. Somebody who knows a lot about it is my next guest. He is the executive director and president of the Myrtle Beach Area Golf Course Owners Association, and also one heck of a nice guy. Please welcome Tracy Connor to the 19th hole. Tracy, how are you, my friend?
I'm very well, Michael. How are you today?
I'm doing great. And see, this is what I'm talking about in South Carolina. Everyone is so polite. Everybody is so nice. It's just, you can't find a single person in a bad mood in the entire state. It's just a magical place. So I really appreciate you taking time out from the people there to be with me here. I really do.
Well, thank you, and looking forward to having a conversation.
Well, let's do it. First, before we talk a little bit about Myrtle Beach, let's talk a little bit about your organization, the Myrtle Beach Area Golf Course Owners Association. If you talk a little bit about the mission and vision of that association, what you guys are in business to do.
Sure. So we were actually founded in the mid-70s, and our mission and vision is really to represent the golf course owner and operator and assist them on the expense side as well as the revenue side, their balance sheet. And so we've got programs in place that accomplish both of those goals. Each golf course from Shallotte, North Carolina to Georgetown, South Carolina is a member of our group.
Outstanding. So you got a huge area. And about how many courses would you say you're representing right now?
74.
74. That's a great number. And that sort of leads me into the history of Myrtle Beach, because there's still a few people who don't know a lot about Myrtle Beach. You know as much as anybody. Talk a little bit about the history of Myrtle Beach golf, when it got started, how it advanced, and how it's doing today.
Absolutely. So our first golf course is Pine Lakes. It opened in 1927. And so Just this upcoming year, we're celebrating 100 years of golf along the Grand Strand.
That's fantastic. Congratulations there, I have to say. That's an amazing accomplishment.
Thank you. The golf course was actually opened and founded before the city of Myrtle Beach was founded. Myrtle Beach wasn't founded until the 30s.
I did not know that. And Myrtle Beach Golf has expanded and grown. You said there's 74 courses. How about how many courses are in the Myrtle Beach area?
So we have 80 courses total. We have six private equity clubs in our market, in addition to the 74 that have their doors open to the public.
That's an amazing ratio of public to private, because I would guess here in the D.C. area, it's more probably like 50-50 is what it seems like sometimes. I know that's probably an exaggeration, but to have that much good golf open to the public is extraordinary. And I really compliment your members on being able to do that. By the numbers, when we talk about number of players, we've talked about number of courses several times. When we talk about number of players, number of rounds per year, I know you guys are among the leaders in the country. How many players and rounds are you doing over the last few years?
Yeah, so we're so blessed here in Myrtle Beach. Our rounds have been at an all-time high. And so just this past year, we will exceed 3 million rounds played here in Myrtle Beach across our family of courses. In addition to those rounds, the economic impact that our courses drive for the greater Grand Strand area and community will be $1.6 billion this past year. And our courses will employ right at 3,500 residents.
Those are amazing numbers. I mean, congratulations, number one, because you've had the most rounds you've ever had. This is, of course, I don't think it's the most courses you've ever had, right? The number of courses has consolidated, but the number of players, partially thanks to the pandemic, has really exploded.
That's right. We've had a contraction in the number of courses. We have lost right at 40 golf courses. And it's all been to the growth in our area. They've all been lost for higher and better use, primarily residential neighborhoods now.
Yeah, you can see that when you're driving through the area. You see how many new apartments and houses and condos and things like that. The area is just growing like a lot of the South is. It's growing tremendously. And new people in the area want great golf, and that brings me to my next topic, which is the award-winning courses in Myrtle Beach, because a lot of Myrtle Beach is about affordable travel, and we'll talk about affordable courses in a minute, but you all have some of the best courses anywhere down there. Talk a little bit about your award-winning golf and some of those courses that you have in the area.
Absolutely. And so really, the second golf course that opened its doors is the Dunes Golf and Beach Club. They opened their doors in 1948. They're currently hosting the One Flight Myrtle Beach Classic, our PGA tournament that will be played here Mother's Day weekend. So very proud to be able to host that tournament and to host it on just an unbelievable venue and golf course. But in addition to the Dunes Club, we have courses like Tidewater, Caledonia True Blue, Pauly's Plantation, barefoot. At one time, we had, and it still may hold true, I just haven't seen the stat in a few years. We had 10 of the top 100 courses you could play in the Golf Digest rankings.
Wow, that is fantastic. Just in that one area, that a full tenth of the courses that are available is saying quite something. It really means something to the area and to the golf fan in general. But you're listening to Tracy Connor, the executive director and president of the Myrtle Beach Area Golf Course Owners Association here on the 19th hole. Michael Williams, your host. We've talked about the award-winning courses. I think that Myrtle Beach has some of the best, I will say, affordable, accessible courses too, because they may cost less, but they're just as much fun. That's always been a focus for the golf courses in Myrtle Beach, hasn't it?
You know, it really has. We're a place for every golfer. And we like to think of ourselves as a great place for a buddy's trip, both ladies as well as men. And we've got a price point to meet anyone's budget.
And you put together those courses in packages. Are there, I guess you're open to outside organizations that do that. Is there an internal Myrtle Beach organization? Say, is there a website where I could go to find information about how to book a trip, travel, courses, that sort of thing?
Absolutely. And so if you would go to playgolfmyrtlebeach.com and you will find each of our golf courses listed there. And so you can read and view those courses and learn more about each of the golf courses, the location, and help, you know, pick the ones that best fit what you want to experience on your next vacation. But in addition to that, there are 40 hotel and travel providers that can assist you in that process.
Wow, that's amazing. And I would like to say that it's golf for the entire family. I know there's a lot of destinations, both within the United States and overseas, that that advertise themselves as being for the golfer. And you go there and you'll see 12 guys who are there together. But in Myrtle Beach, you see families. And I think that's such an encouraging, it always makes me smile to see a family on the golf course, see families enjoying a meal and talking about their round and that sort of thing. So I think that's what Myrtle Beach is for. That's what it encourages, and that's what you'll find there. To that end, you guys have an amazing array of options for after the round, including dining, top golf, things like that, even going to the thing that's in the name, the beach. So, I mean, maybe you could talk a little bit about some of the things to do after you play golf.
I can, but maybe just if I could, just to jump back to the family aspect.
Please.
Something that we're very, very proud of here in Myrtle Beach. Each and every one of our golf courses have a Juniors Play Free program. Hmm. So with a paying adult, your junior, 16 and younger, there's no charge. And so that's something we're very, very proud of. And that program runs year round for every golf course in Myrtle Beach.
Well, that's amazing because I turned 16 this year. So that'll be so much fun. No, honestly, in all seriousness, I did not know that. And repeat that again. All golfers, 16, is it under 16 or 16 and under?
Yes. Well, we 16 and younger.
16 and under, golf for free. That is amazing. For all courses in the association. So yet another reason for families to take a look at Myrtle Beach before any place else for a vacation or getaway that has golf involved in it. You mentioned it once before, but if you would, again, just mention the place where we can go to get more information about Myrtle Beach travel and how to get this trip planned.
PlayGolfMyrtleBeach.com, and you can find information there about our junior golf programs as well.
Outstanding. And Tracy, I got to ask you, we haven't seen each other for a little while, but have you been having a chance to get on the course yourself? How's your game?
I'm getting older and my game's getting worse, but the enjoyment is at an all-time high.
Well, we haven't had a chance to hit the links together, but we have to do that next time. I'm in the area. So keep your calendar open, okay? And be ready to scratch in a place for me, because even if I get you for nine holes, I would love to have you out there, my friend.
Would love to play around.
Thank you so much. Tracy, thanks again for being with us. Congratulations on everything you've done. And we'll have you back in sooner rather than later for that 100th anniversary celebration, okay?
Looking forward to it.
Thank you very much. That is Tracy Connor, the executive director and president of the Myrtle Beach Area Golf Course Owners Association. I am, of course, biased because I have a South Carolina bias, but I think that there is no greater place in the United States of America to play golf and just play than Myrtle Beach. It has something for everyone, literally. And I highly advise you, if you've been there before, get there again. You won't recognize it. You'll have so much fun. If you haven't been there before, as my friend Ferris Bueller once said, I highly recommend it. Please get there. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back with more golf and stuff. Michael Williams, 19 Hole. Welcome back to the 19th Hole. Michael Williams, your host for another episode of this unbelievably good show, I have to say. So, I was just at the opening of the Myrtle Beach National Golf Course, the King's North Course there, and it is a wonderful course. It is so much fun to play. And to me, the more I play, you don't get a chance to play in a lot of places where tournaments are held, PGA events, and that sort of thing. I've played in a couple of pro-ams, that sort of thing. And they are hard. And I think it's not difficult to make a golf course hard. I think it is difficult to make a golf course fun. And this course is just fun. It gives you so much enjoyment to play this particular track. I had a fantastic time. Joining us is a guy who has spent a professional career really making golf courses and making fun and really just beautiful golf courses. Had a chance to meet him at the opening of King's North, and I really had to have him on this show. Please welcome the owner and chief golf course designer for Brandon Johnson Golf Course Design, Brandon Johnson. Brandon, welcome to the 19th Hole. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you. And I just want to be clear, you are not the mayor of Chicago, right?
I am not. I've been mistaken for a lot of people, him included, but I am not a politician by any stretch of the imagination.
Just wanted to get that clear for all of my guests, because
I think we both have a great goatee, maybe.
You both have fantastic goatees. And a lot of my listeners know that I do two things, golf and politics, are my two subjects for or on the air content, and I know Brandon pretty well, and it was pretty funny that you guys have the same name, same goatee. It's kind of interesting. So we appreciate
different
you.
Skill set.
There you go. We appreciate you playing along there. But Brandon, you have had just what could only be called a stellar career in golf. Talk a little bit to us about how you got started in golf, and how you advanced in golf, some of the highlights for you that have been in the game, which have included time with the great Arnold Palmer.
Yeah. My whole journey started because I fell in love with the game. Mm-hmm. I think I was 12 when I started and went out with a friend and literally just fell in love with the game. And I played soccer before, played baseball, played basketball in the driveway and with friends, played tackle football in somebody's backyard. But when I played golf, it was something clicked. I'm not sure what it was, but, I fell in love with the game. And so I came at this profession of being a golf course designer through my love of the game and through not getting good enough to make money at swinging the golf club. But certainly it opened up the door to the design world.
And you, so
And,
you always wanted to have a connection with the game, be it as a player, through whatever. But design is that place that really found its the common handshake with the game and welcomed you into the game.
And early on, there's a lot that you don't know. I mean, I was it, we're talking in the TPC at Sawgrass is going to be on TV with the Players Championship, and that would have been one of my courses that inspired me to become a golf course architect. The, kind of this time of year, with it was the Arnold Palmer Invitational, the Players Championship. You get the Masters. There was the courses at Harbortown. I was watching a lot of golf, and trying to play a lot of golf too. It was perfect because I was in Charlotte, North Carolina, and it was you're coming out of winter, so there were days that you could play, but certainly those days when you couldn't, I was glued to the TV, and watching them swing to try and get better, and then looking at that golf course behind them, going, wow, that's pretty amazing. And went into landscape architecture to be a golf course architect. And when I think back, I mean, it's 30 plus years now. I mean, I didn't know what I was getting into. I mean, I didn't know. I mean, I love golf. And I said I wanted to be a golf course architect. Yeah, I want to build golf courses, but I didn't really know what that was. And I wasn't really sure I knew what a landscape architect was. And that journey in school was amazing too, because it opened up my eyes. All of a sudden, I loved design. It was art, it was the architecture, it was the process, it was analyzing the world around you and how you interact with it. It was an examination of the world around you, and I fell in love with it. And there was a bit of a battle. Do I want to be a professional landscape architect, or do I want to be a golf course architect? And obviously the golf was always in my heart. It won out.
And much to our benefit, it did win out because some of the work that you have done has been spectacular. Of course, we played on the Myrtle Beach National Course there at Kings North. Talk a little bit about that one. That's the latest. So we'll talk about that one first and then sort of venture back. How did you come to get that work, and what was your idea for what you wanted to accomplish there?
Yeah, I've been in conversation with Steve May and the Founders Group International for a while, and that was when I was with the Arnold Palmer Design Company, and then ventured out on my own, and we were just kind of still in discussions, and they said, "Hey, it's finally time to renovate this golf course," and it had been 30 years, I guess, since they had done any significant capital investments. And so, the process was, wow, there's a lot of infrastructure here that is old, dilapidated, needs to be replaced and or just removed and put back as something different. And we're at a different space and time with golf too, and what that golf course can and should be. And obviously it has the Arnold Palmer legacy behind it. But there were some things that needed to change, needed to be addressed. And so there was a bit of a negotiation between myself and Steve May and Max Morgan, who's kind of their head agronomist, in trying to figure out what is the proper scope of work when you have, it was a limited budget. They weren't going to put $50 million into this facility. I really appreciate actually how they funded the project, because they do it out of cash, and they own 20 golf courses and they make money, and they put that money back into their facility. And they said, "Hey, here is a decent amount of money, but we need to stretch the dollar, and we also need to stretch the time or compress the time that you have, because that's what funds this golf course." So, balancing that scope that was necessary and then that scope that you wanted to do or really needed to do to take the golf course to where it could or should go, within this time and budget was that was a big part of the pre-construction side of things.
Yeah. And so when I look at a golf course renovation or restoration, and we can talk a little bit about the difference between the two, if you like, between restoration and renovation. But I see it as being cut really clearly between things that go on above ground, between what you see as a player, what catches your eye, and things that go on beneath the surface in terms of how the bunkering is structured and where you put things in irrigation, that sort of thing. If you want to make a split at King's North between above ground and beneath the surface, what was the percentage? Was it about 50-50, 60-40? Where do you figure that split was?
It was probably even 60-40, maybe even 70-30 above ground versus below ground,
Okay.
only because we didn't redo the irrigation system. And that starts to get into, some of the start stop points that we were bound to. We didn't grade through the entire piece of property. We concentrated on the green surrounds or greens complexes, some of the approaches to the greens. There were certain holes like 2, 6, 10, and 18 that went a lot farther out from the green than others. But there were some greens like 11 where it was basically the surround of that green. 14 basically that greens complex and that's it. In fairway bunkers and the waste bunkers. So there was a significant portion of that golf course that didn't get touched. And I think why I think it was very successful is because it looks completely different and plays completely different. And we didn't have to touch everything. Some of that is because it had a pretty good structure to begin with. We weren't going to reroute golf holes. That wasn't part of the scope. But we were able to target what we needed to fix. And so yes, we put in irrigation around some of the areas that we touched, but it wasn't a full irrigation remodel. We added drainage. There was a lot of surface drainage out of there. But when we did the greens, we left a lot of the infrastructure in there. So that's why I said kind of 70-30. That a lot of above ground got changed and not as much of the infrastructure underground got changed throughout, just in the areas that we touched.
Gotcha. And if I'm mistaken, you worked for Arnold Palmer Golf for, is it 12 years you were there?
I was there for 17 and a half years.
17 and a half years.
Yeah.
I wanted you to talk a little bit about what it was like to work with that company and with the great man and how that influenced what you do now and specifically what you'll find at King's North.
Great question. And as I answer this, please ask a few other follow-up questions if I kind of go off course a bit. But when I think back about it now, I mean, it was a dream come true to work for a legend of the game, Arnold Palmer. I mean, I wrote a research paper about him in the 10th grade when I was dreaming about golf courses instead of my English work that I was supposed to be doing. And to think that I worked with him, was mentored by him, had a relationship with him. It's a dream come true. That little kid that got sucked into the game and loved the game would have never dreamt that I would have had that kind of experience with him. So I'm forever grateful that he trusted me with, his designs and design legacy. And I've often said too, what I learned from him, sure, there's certain things that he said about design that I think about. Some I wholeheartedly agree with, some it challenges me, and or I don't agree with, but watching him with people, it was a master class in how to treat people and how appreciative he was. of his fans, and to continue to hear those stories, even today, that's an amazing human impact, and that is hard, because we all have bad days, and to consistently hear stories that are inspiring, that are funny, people are laughing and smiling when they're telling you about their Arnold Palmer story. That's an incredible legacy.
Yeah, I have my own very brief, but what I had a chance to meet him at the World Golf Hall of Fame, and one of the most signature things about him was his handshake, and you would notice both the size and strength of his hands, but the fact that his eyes were looking right into yours, and there could be a million people around him wanting to get photographs, and very often were close to that number, wanting to talk to him or get something from him or relate some story to him. But when he was talking to you, he was talking to you, just you. And you felt like you were just with him. And that's the way I felt with him. He was just kind of a unique person in that way. And I'm sure you felt like that, even getting a chance to meet him and work with him every day.
And it was great working with him, to see that interaction, with people, to see how excited they were to be around him and to know him. But it was also great to hear his thoughts on the game and design. And he gave us an unbelievable amount of freedom. I think he always wanted us to push the envelope. He was a tinker himself. I can't imagine that he went too many rounds without changing a club, changing a grip, messing with something always to get better. So, and that certainly resonates with me, not only my own game, but even with design, that you're always pushing for that next level. And so you kind of take that into what we're doing at King's North, and yeah, I think we were respectful to some of the things that were there, but saw opportunities to make it better, to make it different, certainly with my own company, to make a bit of it my own, and almost pay homage at times to maybe some of the things that he did earlier or maybe would have done. But it is quite different from, that previous version.
We're talking to Brandon Johnson of Brandon Johnson Golf Course Design here on the 19th hole. Michael Williams, your host. King's North is a beautiful, fun golf course, and it seems like that's what people are into now. When you have so many new people coming into the game, we're still seeing record numbers of people coming into the game. Numbers are getting a little flatter now, but still, so many people are discovering and enjoying golf. How does that influence golf design? Because I know that at one point there was this a trend towards making golf courses as difficult as possible. I don't think that that's a trend anymore. What are your principles behind keeping this cohort of people into the game, interested in game, and interested in the game, and maybe even having them fall in love with the game like you did?
I think that last part that you mentioned, if me as a designer, as a golf course architect, can build something that moves a bit of emotion, maybe it's a really happy emotion, maybe, hey, this game can be a bit frustrating, but frustrating in a good way, going, man, I want to try it again. Or it's fun, it's thrilling, it's interesting. Man, if I can do that as an architect, then I've achieved something. And I think, and you mentioned it earlier, it is so fun to play. And, as a kid, you get done with whether it's 9 holes or 18 holes and just wanted to go around again. If you can kind of create that feeling, that someone, either wants to go around the next day or that day, or man, I'm on this trip and I'm going to come back and play, then, we were successful. And that's the goal, right? Is to create something that is worthy of multiple plays, too. That, tees are going to be different, the pins are going to be different, and it's going to present a different challenge or puzzle to solve and conquer. And to me, that's that's a heck of a lot of fun. All the little nuances that appear, within the design. So I think that's what you need to do to keep this new wave of golfer interested. I mean, sure, it's great to hit balls into a simulator and get all the numbers and everything, but it is different when it's outdoors, and it's better when it's outdoors and you can see the birds and the alligators and the fish and the colors of the grass and spend time outdoors with, three other human beings and connect. And then do it within this game environment and have fun, and then do it 2 or 3 days in a row, and that game is going to shift a little bit on you. Not only your own game, but the architecture that's in front of you, has those layers to peel back. So, I mean, that's not one principle, but that's certainly a philosophy, a thought behind it, that it should be in enjoyment, and that enjoyment comes in a lot of different levels.
It comes from challenge and it comes from success, quite frankly. Even if it's periodic success, and you still see courses that are built back to 7,600 yards, 7,700 yards, and most people have no business being back there except to take pictures. But I think that the best courses are challenging to a player, but allow success that creates a desire to come back and succeed again, or to try again, at least.
So the I played an emergency nine on the golf course 2 days after the event that you were on. And I got paired with some random people, and we started on number one, and two of the guys played that golf hole different from each other. But when I was recollecting on why we were making certain changes and watching them play, and the fact that they only hit the golf ball, 150, 160 yards maybe, and were able to plot their way around that par five and make par. I was like, wow, it worked.
Nice.
They figured it out. What I was dreaming of and thinking and executing, they discovered one of the many paths to get at that golf hole.
Yeah, as
And
they
so that
say.
was satisfying and validating in a way, but yeah, it works. And they had,
Still there? Okay, we'll keep going. As they say, it's not how, it's how many. And I quite enjoy playing with guys who are different ages, different abilities, different ways to do it. Because whether you drive the ball 300 yards or don't, a four is a four, a five is a five, and it's just a joy to me to see people get there in different ways. And that sort of brings me to the next question, which is, I mean, you see all of these, you see so many golf courses now that are super expensive, the high-end courses that $600, $700, $800, you can spend as much as you want on a round of golf. But more people who are coming into the game are coming in at that lower end. And I always laugh because some of those lower end experiences with irregular greens and maybe some patchy spots in the rough, those are the places where better players need to play. It's harder to play those courses than it is to play a place that's perfect. So, when you're looking at a course, how much does what it costs to play there figure into it? Are designers, yourself included, really thinking about how to make courses, not only just make them, but make them more affordable and available to people in general?
I think so, and it starts with the client too, and their goals. And then obviously at Myrtle Beach National, they have a clientele. They have a collection of courses. They wanted Myrtle Beach National to kind of ascend towards the top of their portfolio again. So even though we were thinking about playability and fun and even maintenance, There were some things that we did that, again, maybe the maintenance team is going to have to spend a little bit more time on this waste bunker edge or this bunker edge. We expanded fairways. And I think there are a handful of architects out there that live in that space of wanting to make golf courses affordable and accessible. And I'd even cycle back to that earlier kind of question answer that just because it's affordable and accessible doesn't mean that the architecture itself should be any less. It's in a way it's grass and dirt and some sand, and maybe it's a much more sparing use of sand. Maybe you don't need to have the massive sandscapes maybe that we were able to do at a Myrtle Beach National, but the singular bunker could be just as effective, maybe even sometimes more effective. It's contour. So, I'm a strong proponent of affordable, accessible facilities, but I do think that it should be excellent architecture too. And if you're taking someone who's never experienced the game and you give them, some really, either bold, golden age architecture with, a big Redan and a Baritz and, these other, double plateau features in greens, and then even, the hog's back fairway, all these great, wonderful features, or the modern version or interpretation of any of those things. I mean, they're not going to know any different. Maybe that, wow, this is just a heck of a lot of fun. This is crazy. And then when you go to something else that's not that, you go, wow, why isn't this as good? So just because, public and affordable, accessible, I think that's where the industry went wrong. And I think we're seeing a return to maybe to some of this, better architecture that is public. Unfortunately, some of it's still very expensive, but hey, you get a great piece of property or an owner that wants to create that kind of facility, and I think it can and should be done. Just less thrills, less, not everything's going to be a sandy waste area, not everything's going to be a 100 yard wide fairway, but that doesn't mean that it's not good. Doesn't mean that people can't enjoy it.
Indeed. I would love to stay on here with you for a couple of hours, but I just have a couple more minutes. One question I wanted to ask you, well, I guess it's a two-part question, really. What is, if you could name one of your courses, you've done many, many tracks, is there one course that you feel you would love for people to play so that they could see how you feel and how you think about the game, one of your tracks they'd like you to play? And if you could also name one track that you haven't played that you'd most like to.
Oh, both hard questions.
Indeed.
And people that know me, this I can't answer it with just one. It's like my daughter comes and goes, what's your favorite food? What's your favorite meal? It's like breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
I'm the same way. Go ahead. Take that.
But well, I'll say three. I mean, I think Myrtle Beach National for that kind of renovation, the presentation of that golf course, and like you said, I don't think it's a lot of fun to play. We had a lot of fun doing it, but I think it is fun for all levels. I think it's playable for the higher handicap, and especially if on some of the, there's some force carries that are in there that, couldn't do anything about, but that's kind of the heroic nature of that golf course. Three, if you're playing the right tees on three, you can manage the force carries. Same with four, and same with six. So I think Myrtle Beach National and certainly some of the greens, there's movement, but it's not crazy contour. I think it's really fun. Contours in and around the greens where you can play shots off of banks and funnel down into pins. That's one place. Spring Island Old Tabby Links was a remodel that I did back with the Arnold Palmer Design Company in 2012.
And where's that located?
It's in South Carolina too.
Okay.
Out in between Beaufort and Hilton Head. It's a really it, a lot of people don't get to see it because it's private. But it's a wonderful golf course. And then, the other one, Lakewood National Commander Course.
Yeah.
And this was done with the Arnold Palmer Design Company. It was actually the last plan of mine that Mr. Palmer saw. It was the last time I saw him. It was on my desk, and we had a couple of words about it and shook hands. He left, and unfortunately, I never saw him again. But
Wow.
that's what was on my desk, and it was a flat piece of property. And it's within a housing development, but I think the route and the land plan that we inherited and were able to kind of reconfigure, certainly for the Commander Course, which hosts a Korn Ferry Tour event, makes it f play and feel different. And it's got wide, generous fairways. There's some movement in those fairways and on some of the greens. But that membership absolutely loves the golf course. And Joel Earhart, the superintendent, has it in impeccable condition. I got to brag on them for a bit because they won the Korn Ferry Tour's course of the year, host course of the year for 2025.
Outstanding.
So it's in wonderful shape. I went back and renovated all the bunkers after Hurricane Debbie blew everything out. So some of the bunkers are historically accurate to what we originally built or what I originally built with the company, and then some of them have been changed and enhanced. But it's a really fun golf course, and it's in excellent shape. And yes, the Korn Ferry Tour players are, but someone's going to break 60, and which is fine. But I also think, when someone breaks 60, someone's going to shoot 78. And
Right.
so it's just, it's that kind of golf course.
Gotcha.
And it's a lot of fun. So those are the three. Now the golf course that I haven't played, there's a long list.
What's at the top of the list?
At the top of the list. Oh boy. You know what? I love to travel, and I got to go a long, long way. So there's some courses in New Zealand and Australia. And I'd say maybe it's like a Terra Edie. I haven't been to New Zealand, so I'd like to see that. And then I'll just have to slide on over and see the, is it TRE down there? I think that's what you call them, that
Yes.
Cor Crenshaw
You
did a course.
got them, and I just talked to those people recently, and I will let them know that you are looking for a trip and
Come knocking on their door.
hello. Anybody
Here to
home?
study architecture
No.
and play a little
Roger
bit.
that. We'll make sure that we can get that done. I would love to play those
Great.
courses with you. Brennan, thank you
Yeah.
so much for spending the time. You've given us a wonderful insight into what it takes, what it takes to make a great golf course, and what you guys are looking at when you look at a golf course. I'm surely it's different than what we see. You're like looking at the Matrix. But thank you for taking the time, and we'd love to have you back again to talk about some golf courses, some trends, and things like that. If you can have the time for us, we'd love to have you back.
Well, thanks for inviting me. I'd love to come back and continue the conversation. I can talk golf and golf architecture for a long time, so please, let's do it again.
Roger that. We got a lot of tape here, so we can make it work. Not a problem. Thank you so much, Brennan.
Great.
That's Brandon Johnson, the owner and, of course, chief designer for Brandon Johnson Golf Course Design. I did have a chance to meet him in again, meet him again, I should say, in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, the one of the homes of golf, the meccas of golf worldwide, I would say. And it's just fascinating to look at a guy and talk to him who looks at a piece of ground and says there could be a golf course here, and this hole goes there and that hole goes there. And it's one thing to be able to play those holes, but I've always found it fascinating, the people that can look at just a landscape and say this is a hole and that's a hole, and gradually over time have that thing emerge. It's like a sculptor. And I think it was Michelangelo who said about one of his sculptures, maybe the David, he said, how did you do that? How did you envision that? And he says, well, the David was already in that piece of stone. I just let him out. And that is the way I feel about golf course architects, that the golf courses are there, but they're the ones who see how to take those things away that aren't the course and leave that thing that we enjoy so much. So I really did enjoy that conversation. I can't wait for the next one. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll be talking more golf and other stuff. So stay with us. Michael Williams, 19th Hole. Well, that's it, and that's all for this edition of the 19th Hole. I really want to thank our special guest, Tracy Connor of the Myrtle Beach Area Golf Course Owners Association. He knows so much about the game, but what's more important, he does so much for the game. I really appreciate knowing and working with guys like Tracy, because they are the people who make the game available for us and make it better, just a little bit better, year after year after year. Thank you so much, Tracy, for spending the time to talk with us. Also with Brandon Johnson, who is an absolute genius when it comes to golf course design. Thank you for sharing some of your notions about where the game is and where it's going. It's really fabulous to hear that. And we can't wait to get down to Myrtle Beach this year. I haven't been down there this year more than once. I've been down for the opening of Brandon's course, but I really hope to go down and spend a week. And I hope you get a chance to do it too, because there is really no more fun place to be than Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, to enjoy the game of golf. You can get this podcast and all episodes of this podcast in great locations like Apple Podcasts or Spotify or other places where great podcasts are domiciled. Thank you so much for listening to this program. We appreciate each and every one of you. We really hope to have you back next week for another great episode. In the meantime, it's warm. Go out, hit some balls, hit a lot of them. And when you do, do your very best to hit them straight. Michael Williams, 19th Hole.